Hello and welcome to another episode of the Criterion Quest, the continuing podcast series looking at important films and contemporary classics. My name is Chris and I'm joined as always...
Hello.
Oh, you jumped the gun. Damn it. Tom, how are you going today?
Very well, thanks.
That's good. That is good. we're back with another episode. What spine number are we at? Number 184, looking at By Brackage, an anthology.
And it's quite an anthology.
Tom, do you want to do a plot synopsis?
Well, it's 243 minutes long. Well, look, there's a series of films.
Yes.
And we actually haven't watched any of them at this stage.
Yeah.
Because we have a little plan that we're going to put into motion for this episode, similar to what we did with Fishing with John, where we watch an episode, talk about it, and then go back in to watch another episode and then record again.
Yeah.
So we'll do a similar thing this time. But how many films is there in this anthology?
Close to 30.
Okay. So we thought, we're not doing it all.
And also, if we were to sit down and watch every single one of these films and then have a discussion about it afterwards, this episode would be ridiculously long and tedious. So we're not going to go ahead and do that. What we're going to do is keeping in... Tom came up with a genius idea of keeping in the name of the... In keeping with the name of the title of this show, The Criterion Quest, we're going to roll a d20.
Yeah.
And play some bingo.
We've attached numbers equal to up to 20.
Yes, I've left a couple of the films off the list just for the sake of brevity and things, and so we've got a bit of a wide spread of all the different films, and we're going to each assign them a number between 1 and 20, and we're going to go for it.
But that's not all.
No.
We're going to play bingo too.
Yes, we are.
We've set up some bingo cards with the titles of a selection. There are 4x4 rows and columns. And we're going to finish the podcast when somebody wins bingo.
Yeah.
So, you know, that...
We could end up... Like, it'll happen eventually, but I think we'll get through quite a few of Stan Brackage's films before we hit bingo.
Yeah, and I hope it doesn't bother anybody, but in preparation, we... kind of made sure that our DVD was working, and a lot of it is silent.
Yeah.
Silent films, extremely abstract, so yeah. I think we could all agree that 243 minutes is not entirely necessary.
Yes. I'm intrigued though, before we kind of jump in, Tom, have you even heard of Stan Brackage before?
Never.
Okay. I'm just gonna, like, for simplicity's sake, I'm just going to read the back cover of the Criterion Edition here. It's working completely outside the mainstream. Stan Brackage made nearly 400 films over the past half century. Half century.
Century.
Yeah. Challenging all taboos in his exploration of birth, sex, death, and the search of God, Brackage turned his camera on lovemaking, childbirth, and even actual autopsy. Many of his most famous films pursue the nature of vision itself and transcend the act of filming, treating each frame as a miniature canvas. Brackage pioneered the art of making images directly on film itself, starting with clear leader on or exposed film, then scratching, drawing, painting on it by hand. Brackage continued to produce only a quarter second film a day. But over the years, his visionary style of image-making has influenced everything from cartoons and television commercials to MTV music videos and major motion pictures. I found out apparently Martin Scorsese has dozens of framed original stills used from Stan Brackage's films, like lining the walls of his office.
Awesome.
Yeah, and from what I know of Stan Brackage, he's like the godfather of abstract avant-garde and surrealist cinema in America. I wouldn't probably even go so far as to say surrealist. I would just say abstract cinema. Mm, mm. And I know he was the head professor of film studies at the University of Colorado.
Okay, so he's pretty far out, it seems.
Yeah. Two of his graduating students were Trey Parker and Matt Stone. They studied under him, so that's...
Right.
Yeah. So my only exposure to Stan Brackage before is he has a cameo in Cannibal the Musical. They got legendary avant-garde filmmaker Stan Brackage to be in Cannibal. And so that's the only thing of Stan Brackage I've ever seen before. So
no shit.
It's going to be fun.
What a great start.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's not on our bingo cards. But We will say we have designated, because it turns out, like, his most recognizable and, like, kind of widely regarded as his masterpiece is a film called Dogstar Man. So we're going to start with having that as one of our free squares. And we're just going to start with that film, having ticked it off. And then from there, we'll roll the dice and see what happens.
Mm.
So should we jump into Dogstar Man?
We should.
Let's do it. Okie dokie, so that was Dogstar Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Dogstar Man.
That's an experience.
It's actually way better than I thought. I was really worried because it was a 74-minute silent film that's super abstracted.
Oh, it is abstract to capital A.
Yeah. But it's actually quite fascinating.
Yep.
There seems to be a narrative. I mean, let's break it down. There's a prologue and then there's four parts.
Yes.
The prologue is 20-odd minutes. Part one is 20-odd minutes, and then the rest of it, it's kind of...
4 minutes, 7 minutes, yeah.
And so the film is presenting a series of, like, really concise editing.
Mm.
And expecting you to experience a series of symbols, images, narrative, in whatever way you feel like. I guess we'll do a... This is the only one we wanted to really watch.
Yes, yeah.
This is the one that we were going to always watch.
Yeah, because it is kind of widely considered to be his masterpiece. I mean, going by it, you know, it's in the book 1001 Films to See Before You Die. It's in the National Film Registry, like in the Library of Congress. Like, it's considered a great piece of avant-garde and abstract art, so...
So we'll attempt a synopsis, and the other films we'll just kind of watch and talk about in general. But this one,
yeah.
I think we'll do a synopsis, and it's a series of abstracted imagery with a loose sense of a plot, and that is a man with his dog climbing a mountain.
With an axe to go chop down a tree for some firewood, you would assume.
Interlaid over that narrative is, I suppose, his... in a monologue of thinking about his child, thinking about maybe his partner.
Why he's going through this struggle, possibly, to get uphill, and what he's doing this for. I would even throw in, we have the creation of the universe and life itself in there at points, particularly in the prologue.
Yeah, it's really... there's a lot going on.
Yes.
I think let's spend the next maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes trying to process what just happened.
Yeah.
So how do we start?
What I'm intrigued by...
Let's talk about the technical aspects of it.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So you were saying that there's the prelude, there's part one through to five.
And
Brackage has done overlaid imagery.
Yes.
But in the first part, there's only one image.
There's one layer of film happening in part one. In part two is where he starts to superimpose a dual layer of film. So there's images on top of images to help kind of build upon the narrative. And then it kind of keeps going from there, where part three has three layers of film, part four has four layers of superimposed imagery, kind of culminating in this chaotic...
That's right. Like by definition, it's going to become more chaotic as he goes through.
Yeah.
So what is your initial response to a man walking in the woods, cutting down trees with his dog?
As it is presented, what we saw, or just in general?
No, what we saw.
The kind of narrative that I get from it is it's going on from the prologue as well, which is a lot of kind of solar flare imagery, and it seems to be there's some like sexual imagery in there as well, in terms of like whether that be procreation or birth or whatever he's necessarily saying, but it's kind of like creation of man, and then it's showing this this man going up a hill. To like he's presented with a task which he's trying to achieve in part one, and part two, I guess. And then he's starting to... It gets harder and harder the more he climbs the hill, and then he starts to falter, and then you get presented with the imagery of what he's doing this for, or why he's doing this in terms of, like, family and, you know, child and all of that. And then it crumbling makes it all just, like, him not being able to succeed at that goal makes just the world collapse because, yeah, he's not able to supply for his family, I guess.
But and that's part three was this...
Flashing back to the wife and the child imagery.
That's right. And she's got this imagery of the nipple exuding milk and the
child baby. Breastfeeding. Exactly. And, yeah.
So that's clearly... It's not clearly. It seems to be the man trying to draw this inner power to continue.
Yeah.
To get wood for fire to make sure that they're provided for. And then there's just like this fucking flurry of activity at the final part of him getting back up and just hacking it, you know, yeah. whatever is around him, it seems. It's just super chaotic.
Yeah.
But I think as on a whole, I think I enjoy this film mainly because the prologue sets up this really epic grand scope of living.
Mm-hmm.
If you're watching a man's like one millisecond you're watching a man's face, and then another millisecond later you're watching a solar flare, or you're watching a moon being breaking through the clouds. You can't help but go, we're not just looking at a man, we're looking at...
The universe, like Earth, the universe, like, you know, perceivable yeah, life, yeah.
Like, the connection you would draw is not a man, but life.
Yeah.
Right? And so, when you are presented with imagery of a dog with a man walking through the woods, it's not just a man anymore, it's like everything that lives, right?
Mm.
So I like the experience of a silent film taking you through a journey through thinking about like the struggle of life. I think it's so hard to fucking like, unpack yeah, this no, one.
Well, one thing I kind of wanted to ask earlier, just before, was do you think Brakhage is trying to present the struggle of man in general, or modern man, possibly,
I think it's like a primeval thing.
Yeah,
you know, like,
by man, I'm meaning just humanity. I'm just that's what I'm meaning by that.
No, you got the dog with him.
Yeah,
right. So it's like, oh, I don't know. I don't even know. I don't even know. Like,
it's. Yeah.
It's super challenging, man.
Yeah, it is.
Not in the sense that it's like I can't unpack it. It's challenging in the sense that I want to explore it, but there's an abyss to explore here.
Yes, it's like watching, you know, and Chien Andalou and things. Like, you know, there's just so many interpretations. I mean, fuck, it cuts back to the 2001 discussion how... We all watch the same film, but all have different interpretations of what it's presenting, what it's meaning. But it's like that to the infinite degree. It's like watching the Stargate sequence of 2001 for 74 minutes. And trying to decipher not only meaning from the images that are being presented, but we're trying to extrapolate narrative itself from abstract imagery.
Well, I feel like I'm watching it and... it's asking me to plumb the depths of not just why I exist, but why everything exists.
Yeah. And why do we therefore does it go into the question of why do we do what we do?
Yeah, there's so much, like there's a million questions that arise from that.
Yeah.
And so even in 74 minutes of watching, like, apparently this film, you mentioned that this film goes for 4 hours.
There's an alternate hours. Version called The Art of Vision, which goes for 4 hours or so, where it's you don't, for the, you know, parts 2, 3, 4, you don't watch it with overlaid film. You watch it as the individual layers all itself constructed together as a long 4-hour art piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it'd be like, that would be the rewatch. You know what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah.
And now you just need more time to be in that zone.
And just sit through sequentially, like, trying to decipher each image as it hurtles towards you, I guess.
I'm not actually... This is the most interesting thing I've thought of in terms of watching this film is the film itself is asking you to do these... Think about, you know, what it means to live and stuff like that. But I think the best thing about this film is not that I want to unpack the narrative. I feel like the best part of this film is it's just asking me to... It's mysteriously surface level. It's presenting itself as, let's talk about... I'm here to let you think about what life is.
Yeah.
And so let's spend the next 74 minutes thinking about it.
And I'm just going to present you with images to help evoke your thought process.
Yeah, it's not... Yeah, I feel like this... It's an extremely weird sensation when I stop wanting to unpack the film and I realize that the film is just wanting to have me unpack me.
Yes, yeah. Yes, precisely. Like, it's presenting you with the right sequence of images to allow you to just kind of sit there and self-reflect. And be like, what? I'm being bombarded with these images. How I'm interpreting them is making me evaluate myself and my existence and how I perceive
and my connection life with everything else.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a really weird film.
Yeah, this movie's fucking hardcore.
It's really hardcore. Because you stop evaluating the film.
Yes.
And you start evaluating everything else.
Yeah.
And that's why it's amazing.
Yes. It's pretty phenomenal. I like 100% understand why it is, like, you know, in the National Film Registry and considered a masterpiece of abstract art. It's fascinating to watch.
It's super fascinating. Like I got to admit that a man trying to climb a mountain with his dog. It's I don't want to say this, but it's
kind of base.
It's really yeah. It's kind of it's. Too easy as a symbol almost.
But need that simplicity to be able to then... because if it...
It doesn't need to be complex, though.
No, that's what I mean. Thing. Yeah, like, because the imagery that is being used in the film is so complex and so artistic and so innovative that the narrative in which that's kind of being used to present that has to be simplistic. Otherwise, it's just... brain shut down, I have a nosebleed and pass out.
Absolutely.
We should talk about talk about the construction of the film and how and what it's doing. And because, like, as much as I was doing self-reflection and things like what the film's, I guess, prompting you to do, I can't help but sit there and have the thought of who is this person that looks at, like, a roll of film and a 16mm camera and is like, I can create the images that we saw. Like, it is astounding, the artistic mind behind this.
The process of editing would be a complete...
You can see why it took 3 years to make.
Yeah.
But it's unlike anything... in film before this. Like, it is so unique and abstract that you, like, I mean, shit, that's the only word to describe it, essentially. Mm. Like, who sits down and watches, like, you know, Ben-Hur and is like, I got a great idea, I'm gonna make this. And it's, you know, Dog Star Man. Because it's essentially presenting art in the same medium, but it is so far removed and so... much its own entity that it's like he's going to take a fucking pin and scratch at the actual celluloid itself, paint directly onto film.
Here's an example, right? You were looking it up on IMDb, and it's categorized as a documentary.
Yeah.
Which it's not.
No.
So the person that, whoever tried to categorize this film, just didn't have an option.
Yeah.
There's no category.
There's no category in IMDb for experimental.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Like, yeah, that's like the other... You tick other.
Yeah.
And then you move on with your life.
Yeah, essentially.
But yeah, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. So you need to invent the category other just to put it in a box. and then move on. Mm-hmm. So I think it's quite remarkable.
I will say it's not the easiest of things to watch.
No.
Because it is 74 minutes of silent abstract imagery, so...
But I think we did a failure to the film by watching it on television, for example.
Yeah. You did mention, like, this would be...
This would be pretty incredible in a cinema.
Yeah.
Especially when, you know, there's certain rules to cinema.
Yeah, you don't fucking talk, you don't... Yeah.
You can't get distracted, you have to try and pay attention or you walk out...
And we kind of kept having the problem of bringing up stuff that we'd be taking notes and saving for this discussion right now, but we were kind of constantly catching ourselves talking during the film, being like, we should be having the mic on for, like, this is us trying to unpack and dissect this as we're watching it. So.
Yeah, this happened before when we've watched.
Oh yeah, we normally do that, but
not on this level.
No, that's
nowhere
what I mean.
Near on this level. Yeah. Like, this is the first time we've sat and watched, and we have to share as we're watching the thought process together.
On that note, it would be fucking insane if we had gone 184 films and never talked to each other once while we were watching these.
Well, usually the process is I've got this thought, I'll save it for the podcast.
Yeah,
but this one. I felt the need to just say that.
We needed to work our way through this film together. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, man. I don't want to spend too much time because we have a lot of other stuff to cover.
Yeah, we should kind of wrap it up.
I think we should just say that it's a totally must-see, at least this film.
Yeah, it turns out it's available on YouTube if you want to watch it as well.
Yeah, but it's definitely not for everybody.
No.
I guess if you're feeling pretty philosophical.
Yeah, and you've got 74 minutes to put a microscope on what you think existence is. I guess.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, but it's incredible.
Mm.
It's really good.
All right. Well, on that note, should we roll the D20 and see how we get this bingo game of brackage rolling?
Okay. Yeah. So it's going to be difficult to express what our bingo cards look like throughout the episode, but we're going to try and we won't worry about it initially too much until we start to see some potential columns or rows
patterns
or diagonals being filled out.
Yeah. I think what's going to happen is I'm going to roll the D20. Say what number it is, look on our sheet that we have that has the corresponding film, and then we'll, you know, obviously, you'll figure it out. Yeah.
We're only doing this... Look, we might put up the bingo sheets for everybody and do some, like, you know, a series of 10, 20 randoms. See if you can beat us, just because why not?
Yeah.
But this is basically an idea we had just so that we could not watch 243 minutes of silent films.
Yeah, and then
and try and get a taste at the same time, have an end goal.
A broad spectrum and not have a 4-hour long episode of us just being like, So, let's roll this die. All right, so we got number 19, which is Commingled Containers from 1996.
I don't even have that on my list.
Motherfucker, I do.
Oh
shit.
Chris is definitely winning at this stage.
Let's go watch Commingled Containers.
Alrighty.
Commingled Containers.
2 minutes and something.
Short film. 2 minutes, 42 seconds.
Okay. Of a breakdown of imagery of water movement.
Yeah.
Okay. Pretty abstract. Now, I think... this is what I'm thinking. This is what you would have when you walk into a gallery.
Yep.
And you would walk into a room and there'd be a projector playing some... like moving image of random stuff. The play of the lens on, you know, atoms, matter, whatever.
Yeah.
Normally, I when I go to galleries and I watch these kinds of films... This belongs in a gallery, by the way.
Yeah.
Normally when I watch these films, I watch a little bit and I get a little bit bored and my interest wanes and I go like, I'm just going to go to the next room and just like see what kind of painting or whatever, sculpture, whatever.
Move on to the next piece.
I just move on to the next. So unfortunately, I never watch films in their entirety at galleries because, like, there's a sense of rush. So I do dig the fact that we are doing this right now.
Yeah. Forcing ourselves to actually sit and watch these pieces of art in their entirety, how they're supposed to be presented.
Yeah, because I can get, like, the contextual stuff then to some degree. These kinds of films, 2 minutes and 40-whatever seconds of a breakdown of what of water, I feel like the subject matter is water, but then you have a camera capturing it, and it's displaying an image that can only ever be derived from the lens, the particular kind of camera, whatever it is. And that's what you're presented with. So there's something that's being shot, and there's a thing that's shooting it.
Yeah.
And then there's us watching the product through our own lens. So to me, it's maybe there's like some kind of you're watching the interplay of physics or something like that. But
I think that's kind of what he's supposed to be going for. There is like the breakdown of what makes up, you know, water, essentially. Like, you know, the breaking down of elements, I guess, and like, you know, down to a molecular level to some degree.
It's a thing that a person would make.
Yeah, he's like I'm looking at film through a lens, and now let's magnify that and magnify that and magnify that until we get down to its basest level, I guess. Do you want to hear a little interesting thing?
For sure.
So the title is taken from the label of some refuse bins. It's also meant to refer to its contents. And this is a quote from Stan Brakhage. "Here's the container of the bubbles. In the container that the water is, and the container that is that life is, and they're all commingled containers." So it's basically, that's like what we're being kind of presented in the film is we're presented with imagery of water, and then these molecular structures, I guess, in imagery.
Because you're getting basic shapes from the reflections, right, which your lens is picking up. And then it just becomes a matter of geometry, which is a reflection of the physical nature of the whatever you're filming.
Exactly.
I don't know what to do with that in my mind, but I do like the moving colours.
But it sure looks great.
It sure looks great. And I guess it's enough to just go, yeah, like we have a subject matter, we have an observer, and there's a connection.
Yeah.
That was certainly a film.
Rock on. Do you want to roll the D20, sir? Give it a roll this time.
I have number two.
Number two is my favourite title.
Uh-huh.
Window, Water, Baby Moving.
From 1959. I have that on my sheet.
I do too.
All right, let's cross that one off.
Let's give it a look-see, I guess. Holy crap, that was Window, Water, Baby Moving.
That was 12 minutes of Brakhage's firstborn.
First child being born. Yeah. Intercut with some wonderful imagery of his wife and him expressing joy in a bathtub while she is pregnant, and then intercutting later to footage of the actual childbirth, while interspersing glimpses back to that first moment of joy and elation and kind of culminating into creation of a new life, I guess. I want to bring up, early on in like the first 2 minutes, you said, I don't really like this one. And I want to gauge how that changed through the film, I guess.
Yeah, okay, so initially it was like a, you know, four to six minutes of a woman stepping into a bath in front of a window, hence the title, and then just her kind of... I mean, you didn't know what was going to happen. You didn't know there was going to be a birth.
You were just being presented imagery of a pregnant woman.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so I didn't get the indication that there was going to be a birth, but I felt that it was dragging a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as there is, like, it's really...
When you first see that first shot of the gloved hand coming into frame, you know what is up.
Oh, fuck. Okay, so it's, like, pretty serious stuff. It was an extremely crazy 12-minute journey.
Yes. Harrowing, dare
I mean, and that's the point of the film, because this is made in 1959.
Which is insane.
you know, in that stage, nobody, like, people, like, dudes are not expected to be in the theater. There's no pressure for them.
Let alone widely distributing images of this kind. Like, you couldn't say fuck in a movie in 1959, let alone show legitimate the process of childbirth.
And it's full on. Like, there is, I mean, the photography and the way that it's edited is
the lighting incredible. Is insane. How we managed to pull it off.
You like, have the head crowning, and then you cut to, I suppose, like, moments after the birth when there's still, like, an ejection of fluid that's mixed with blood and whatever coming out of the vagina. And it's just like, whoa, this is real. This is extremely real.
Mm.
And
there was imagery of, there was clips of her water having broken as well. It was, yeah.
It's pretty crazy. And, it's funny to say, but it's super refreshing somehow because you watch any kind of film and pregnancy is like the scene in the film where a kid's been born and it's lovely and whatever.
And Robin Williams is your wacky foreign doctor. I don't know. Yeah.
and it's like a film, you know, it's film birth.
Yeah.
But
it's listening to the remarks. Thankfully, the Criterion DVDs come with Stan Brakhage kind of giving comment on each of the films, and he's talking about like why the kind of duality of why this film exists is because he wanted to be present for the birth, which is something that was not common practice back in the 50s. And then also his wife had a fear of hospitals, just hated hospitals, didn't want to go there. So it was the idea of doing a home birth and having him there, like, kind of facilitated being able to have this opportunity to film, and then him being able to be present and kind of, I think he refers to it as being centered in that moment, is being able to make himself comfortable as behind the lens of a camera. So therefore creating this film,
he's trying to share the moment.
Yeah. And then it turns, like, you know, if you think about it, it's like breaking down the barriers of, like, now it's commonplace to film a birth and all that. So.
Yeah, and at the very least, it's very common. I mean, it's expected now that the male
be there,
the male partner will be there for the birth and share what the film really expertly delivers is the pain, the intensity, and the supreme happiness.
Yeah, the elation and the pure joy that not just that both the man and the woman are feeling with creating and bringing their first child into the world. It's kind of surprisingly beautiful. Film.
It's a remarkable 12 minutes of cinema. Like, the way that he cuts from clearly what is extremely painful, but then cuts back to a moment where there's the male hand caressing the pregnant stomach.
Yeah.
And then back to this what would be really painful experience of the actual birth. Neither of us have ever actually experienced.
And will never experience something like that.
Well,
like,
yeah, I mean, like,
from a female perspective, we should say.
No, least. I mean, like, even just as a, like, I don't have kids, so
yeah.
I can only imagine what it would be like being in the theater or a room in the house, sharing this process of giving birth. Fuck, I lost my train of thought, but shit.
No, that's all right. I think this is nowhere near what I was expecting based on the title of this film, and it's interesting, wonderful, personal, very intimate portrayal of a wonderful moment in these people's lives, and it's great to kind of get that perspective and kind of be shown this in its artistic, like, be shown childbirth in, like, such a beautifully, wonderfully, artistically presented way.
Tom, you were going to say that you found a new favourite filmmaker?
Yeah, I think I have. Cole watched that. And she's eating, like, she's eating dinner. And she had no problems. No problems eating dinner in front of all that. And I think that was the best part of me watching the film was her going, like, oh, you know, I'm like, how can you eat? Like, this is crazy. And she's like, oh, you know, like, it's going to happen to me. So, it's, you know, I'm a woman, you know, I got this.
This
is all part of it. And I think I think for that reason, I was like, this is why the film was made. It's like, you got to show, man, like, this is, you know, even if you're never going to experience this, you can watch this film and try and share the moment and try and put yourself there. Yeah, incredible. I think this filmmaker is fast becoming one of my favorite filmmakers I've ever come across.
You would not have expected this by playing a little game of bingo.
This is the joy of the quest, man. Yeah. Fucking dig it.
On that note, we should probably do an update on our bingo sheets. How are you looking?
I have two crossed off.
No, not in the line.
Not in a line. They're separated.
Okay. I have three crossed off. All three of them being possible combinations leading to a bingo.
Yeah, you have two
horizontal and one diagonal. Row
and you have one diagonal. You were very much winning at this point.
All right, let's give it a roll and see what we're watching next. Number 8, which is a film called Kindering.
Oh, I have that.
I do not. Let's
nice. Time to catch up.
Let's see what Kindering is. That was Kindering. Tom is staring at me blankly. You had a kind of interesting take on this film. One that was opposite of, I guess, the artist's intention.
Yeah, so it depicts his grandchildren, two young, like a boy and a girl, playing in a backyard that's kind of normal in and of itself.
Yep.
But the way that was shot was the image was constantly twisted. There was quite a horrific vibe to the audio, which is the first time we've had audio.
So. Yeah, we should point that out.
And a lot of the shots were taken from, it seems like, they were behind foliage.
Yeah.
You know, like a kind of voyeuristic sense. And it's quite scary.
See, it's interesting because we listen to the Brackage remarks and he discusses the film as a kind of unsentimental representation of grandchildren, in this, to which I kind of then view the imagery we were presented as being someone just casually glancing at, like, the being able to, the separation of yourself from a personal kind of connection with these children. Therefore, it's like as if you're walking down the street and you saw kids playing in the yard and you're just like, oh yeah, cool, that's that.
Yeah, but that's not casual, like the way that he presented, that's not casual glance at kids. It's like,
I guess
it's horrific in a sense. Like I'm looking at it and I'm going, like,
I didn't get it nearly as into that horrific vibe that you did.
When I look at this film, which is really short, and you get a taste and you're just thrown in there, but I feel like, when was this made?
Kindering was 1987.
Okay, so it's actually kind of modern in, like, relative to the other ones.
Yeah.
But this was like a scene from like a 70s or 80s horror film where you use children as this kind of innocence twisted through like some kind of spectrum of violence.
You were waiting for the kids to start doing a nursery rhyme about Freddy's coming for you.
Yeah, I fucking was.
Yeah,
I really was. Like, so I definitely think that he succeeded in trying to present his grandchildren separated from his
own existence,
his connection from them, his love for them.
Yeah, I definitely get what he's presenting in the imagery. I just don't get the horrific slant that you did necessarily.
Just the vibe.
Yeah.
It's just the vibe.
Well, it's it's Marbo. It's the vibe. Yeah. Well, let's give it another roll and see what we land on.
Okay, are you rolling?
No, you're rolling this time.
Okay. We've got number 11.
Glaze of Cathexis.
Okay, I have that.
Yeah. I have that too.
Is that closely completing a line for you? Or?
No, it's adding another possible line for me.
All right, so I've got at the moment, I've got two of four in a row.
If we land on Crack Glass Eulogy, Tom gets a bingo.
Yes, that's right. And I have two of four in a column.
Yep.
But yes, I do have three of four in that row, actually.
Oh, God, this could be wrapped up sooner than we thought. But let's go and watch Glaze of Cathaxis from 1990. I just keep wanting to say the title as if, like, in Seinfeld, like, prognosis negative! Glaze of cathexis! Yeah, we just watched Glaze of Cathexis. Yeah. So, we need to look up the definition of what cathexis is.
Yeah.
Cathexis, noun, from the origin is psychoanalysis, and it's the concentration of mental energy on one particular person, idea, or object, especially to an unhealthy degree.
Okay. I never thought we'd be in this moment right now, tonight.
On a Sunday night, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this is a just over 2 minute film again.
Yep.
It's trying to be a singular biome of activity that's completely separate to everything else.
Yeah.
So if you're going to try to make a film about cathexis, as it is read in the dictionary, then you have to make it separate to every other film you've ever fucking seen.
Yeah.
And so his Brackage's response is, let me just scratch and paint the film.
Let me take film itself, not use it how it's supposed to be used, and use it through another medium, which is he hand paints directly onto the film. And that's how this film is made.
So you have to make it...
He's not actually put film through camera. He is creating, yeah.
Something completely separate to every other film you've ever seen.
Yeah.
It is actually a cathexis.
Yeah, like that kind of obsession on this one singular idea of what it can be, taking it to its most infinite possibility, which is not even its own, like, existence. It's like the reason it was created and is.
Something separate from everything else. It's its own thing.
Yeah.
Done. Yeah, this guy is pretty gnarly, man. Like,
yeah.
Like, I just imagine how this guy thinks. Like, he's obviously... It mentions Freud. I guess Freud coined the term?
That it's coming from psychoanalysis, it means yes.
Like, something succinct that, like, it's its own entity within the mind or whatever. But,
yeah.
But,
to be able to be presented that idea of, like, hey, let's do something on cathexis, and that being able to so succinctly be like, all right, yeah, cool, I got this. Like... That's why I was struggling back with Dogstar Man. I just couldn't help but think of, like, the mind of this man who is able to process art and imagery in such an interesting way is baffling to me. Like, it's so profound and different.
Yeah, I mean, like, these are mostly films from the 60s and 70s. I mean, in this case, in 1990. But he's still, even in 1990, which I would consider as more or less kind of modern... It's still so revolutionary.
Yeah.
That I've never seen anything like this.
Mm. Well, let's keep this this gravy train rolling and see what we land on next.
Okay.
It's number 9, which is a film called I Dreaming.
Oh, I have that.
I have that too, and it puts me one square away from a bingo.
Okay.
Hoo-hoo-hoo.
So I'm looking for Crack Glass Eulogy to complete a line.
Yep.
And now I have two
possible
half completed columns now.
Yeah. I need I Myth, and we've got a bingo. So but let's go watch I Dreaming from 1988. Okie dokie. So I Dreaming. I have an idea of what I think this film is presenting. We're kind of being presented this elderly man kind of on his own, and it's like this distorted song being played, and kind of images and text being presented in the along, like, waiting, longing, fill the void and things, and then we're being intercut with these hyper realistic images of children, and so I feel it's I interpreted this, having not read on it or listened to the remarks by Brackage or anything. So my gut reaction is, it's a person having a dream about, like, what could have been in their life, the dream of having a family and children and things like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow! I just thought it was about the process of preparing for sleep.
Okay.
Yeah, that's so drastically different.
Yeah. Well, you're like, I mean, I extrapolating from the title of Dreaming, like, what does one dream for? And it's, we're being presented this image as a solitary man by himself who's, there are moments of him having a shocked face, he's looking very somber and sad.
Yeah, true, true.
So,
okay. Yeah, yeah.
And then whenever we're presented the images of the children, it's in a hyper-realistic kind of sped up or running backwards kind of notion, which makes me think it's not reality,
not really. Yeah.
Which is, yeah. I could be totally wrong.
No, I'm coming around. I'm coming around. And the fact that the title itself is Dreaming is such a strange way to phrase a sense of I'm going to be dreaming.
Yeah, and the idea of, you know, waiting, longing, filling the void, that deep, dark void of, I guess you could extrapolate, like, existence, like, life. How do you feel that, like, being a solitary creature makes that a dark, dark void, whereas filling it with, you know, family and happiness and joy makes, you know, it fills that void, so.
I don't know how, like, I feel about this one. It's,
I didn't necessarily enjoy this one. This one reminded me very much of watching a David Lynch short film. Which I adore David Lynch's work. Like, he's one of my favorite directors, but it's you got to be in the mood for it. I found this one kind of dark. I mean, based on my own interpretation of the images, I guess.
I just couldn't extrapolate anything from it. It was, I don't know.
It was what it was.
Yeah.
It was Eye Dreaming.
It was Eye Dreaming, 1988.
Yeah. Roll that die, buddy. Let's see what we get next. I'm done on Eye Dreaming.
Okay. I have number 11.
Which is Gaze of Cathexis. Roll it again.
Number 18.
Number 18 is The Dark Tower from 1999.
Written by
Stephen King. let's see what Matthew McConaughey and Idris Elba have in store for us.
Okay, that was The Dark Tower from 1999, an homage to all the dark towers in literary history.
Yep. Presented here as a seeming struggle between darkness and colour.
So there was 2 minutes of paintings and scratchings into film.
Yes.
I mean, there was clearly some kind of a silhouette of a tower separating the colour in the initial, you know, 30, 40 seconds, whatever it was of the film. And then there was mostly darkness, and then these really quite striking lights coming through.
Lights and colours trying to seemingly break through the darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one, I don't connect with too much.
No, it's visually striking, but in terms of,
it's like one of those ones,
connection, there's nothing really to,
I don't know, like, it's one of those ones where, I mean, fucking, we were joking about The Dark Tower.
Yeah.
Stephen King, but I think he's actually referencing that.
I guess to some degree.
Hey, dude. Like,
where was the gunslinger, though? Come on.
he was one of the colours there, for sure. Okay. But I think, I mean, the film at the end, like when you go on DVD and it gives you a quote saying, to all of, in honour of all the dark towers in the race, it has to be referring to, at least in part,
I mean, as
the
well,
dark
and then,
tower
and then
in Stephen King's.
You've got, what is it, not Isengard. Yeah, Isengard. Lord of the Rings and, like, essentially dark evil towers. Where, you know,
that mythological entity that is, like, the centre of evil.
Yeah, and then you have, you know, the fight of colour and lightness and good essentially trying to break down and destroy that darkness. And he's presenting it here through vivid colours, I guess.
This is one of those ones where it's like, I go into a gallery.
Yeah, that's the prime example.
And I'm watching this thing, and then there's, like, this flurry of fucking information activity underneath the piece of art that you can never really extrapolate from the art itself. You have to read books and you have to talk to the people that, you know, invented it and made it. And I don't know how I feel about that kind of artwork, because I, like,
you can't appreciate it on a base level.
You can't appreciate it by having experience it. You have to go beyond that piece of art to experience it.
I can
it
still appreciate
fullest.
That, not knowing anything about brackage or the intention or anything. I can be like, that's cool imagery. And appreciate it on that level, I guess. But as a statement, I need something to... I couldn't connect with it because I couldn't grasp the statement without doing further reading, I guess.
It's fine if the artist intends for people to interpret it in their own way and have their own little experience, but if they... Yeah, this is like one of the eternal artist questions that's never going to be answered, but I definitely did not get the impression that I'm looking at a dark tower and battling the forces of evil versus good and stuff like that.
There weren't even any hobbits. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I apologize, and I'm going to roll the dice. We got number 17, which is Crack Glass Eulogy.
What? That's a bingo.
That's a bingo.
That's a bingo, man.
Tom has won our by brackage bingo.
Well, thanks for playing, Chris.
I was so close. I had like three.
I thought you were
going to
win. You were really in the lead for ages.
But no, you stuck home. But I think we should go watch Crack Glass Eulogy and then come back with a final wrap up and thoughts on by brackage.
No worries.
So that's the way the podcast ends. Not with a bang, but with a whimper called Crack Glass Eulogy.
6 minutes long, depicting bird's eye view imagery of cityscapes.
Was it even?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah. I don't understand this one.
It's kind of a bummer that we're ending this, like, we got a bingo and we're ending the podcast on one that neither of us liked or connected with or got anything from.
Okay, so yeah, the write up of this one. Do you have it there?
I am looking it up now. Crack Glass Eulogy. Rick Corrigan's sparse yet lyrical requiem forms a perfect and forms a perfect analog of the. To the floating effects of Brackage's aerial imagery in one of the greatest of his relatively few collaborations with musicians. There is no attempt to sync music with image, rather the sound exists in a separate parallel space, one conductive to viewing of Brackage's visions of landscapes as shimmering, pointless reflections, and his mixes of views from close and far that deny the viewer solid ground. Yep.
Yeah.
It's fine. Yeah.
It's not as point. I don't know. Like, it's not as this is what I'm learning from Brackage is, if you go into one of his films, you might be blown away, or you might go like, yeah, meh.
Yeah.
Cool. That was definitely an exploration of something that the artist was perceivably very meaningful for them.
Yes.
But as it comes across as a viewer, maybe not so much.
Yeah.
That being said, I fucking adored Dogstar Man.
Yes.
And I fucking adored Window Water Baby Movie.
Yes. I think we, unfortunately, by playing bingo, is a kind of a scale trending downwards as the night went on. But... beautiful art created by a beautiful artist. Wonderful assortment of bizarre imagery and abstract filmmaking, and one that's definitely worth looking at, I think.
For sure, especially, as we said, Window Water Baby Moving. There's so many we haven't actually covered.
I know, that's the thing of the wonderful collection that is by Brackage an anthology. There, 27 films in the collection. Criterion have put out volume 2 of this anthology as well, so there's a secondary collection of Brackage films in there. We've just scratched the surface, but like we said at the beginning, if we were to sit down and do all 4.5 hours of this film by film, this would have been But you can hear in our voices that we're tired at this point. We're kind of mentally drained. Imagine us after 4 hours.
We've been doing this for like 5 hours now.
Yeah, like we started at like 5:30 this afternoon. It's like 9:30. We've been going 4 hours straight.
Four hours.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Like, we've ended up watching, like, and discussing for 4 hours, but imagine, and we've watched maybe, you know, 2.5 hours of film, but if we'd, like, double that, it's oof. So, it's like a day of mental draining, but, not to say that that's a bad thing, but, yeah.
It's a challenging film, dude. Like, yeah. There's no question. This guy has really kind of...
He's
pushed,
an artist.
He's pushed my expectation of what film can be.
Yeah, he breaks the form of what film is, can, and could be, I guess. On that note, we'll talk about the Criterion Edition itself. It's available as a 2-disc DVD or a 1-disc Blu-ray, or you can get it in the anthology of By Brackage Volume 1 and Volume 2 on Blu-ray. It comes with the special features of new high-def transfers on all 26 films, video encounters with the filmmaker, reflections on selected films by Brackage himself, new essay and film...
They're critical.
Yeah.
I must mention, they're critical.
Yeah.
There are some films where you're just like, what the fuck? And then you need the remarks to go like, okay, this is where he's going.
We will say, like, every film that we watched, we ended up listening to the remarks by Brackage, and they shed such wonderful, interesting light on what you've watched. They're such a wonderful addition.
Fucking oath.
As well as the usual essays and booklet that Criterion usually do. Yeah. I'm glad I remembered it. The last two episodes, I've ended up forgetting to do the special features. So I'm going to go back and do the special features. No, I'm kidding. Imagine if I had the balls to be like, let's talk about the special features of La Dame de blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. I thought you were going to, actually. I believed you for a moment.
No, I'm not that insane. And I kind of want to wrap this episode up. So I guess, unless you got any final thoughts, that'll wrap us up for By Brackage and Anthology.
I've found a new favourite.
Nice.
This is a runner-up here. This is a potential... I'm going to pick this for my next best out of 10 kind of thing.
All right.
Shut up, bird.
Yeah, I guess, you know, if you have any comments, queries, we'd love to hear your thoughts on Brackage. If you've sat down and watched any of them, please let us know what you think of them. You can send us an email at thecriterionquest@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter @CriterionQuest or follow us on Facebook through The Criterion Quest. Otherwise, we'll be back in a fortnight's time with a box set. Yeah, we're going to sit down and watch The Adventures of Antoine Donnel. Does that name sound familiar, Tom?
No.
It might, probably, yeah, it was 180 films ago, but Antoine Donnel...
That was like, we're at spine number 184, that's...
Number 4... The 400 Blows.
Armacord.
No.
That was number 4, right?
Yeah, Armacord was number 4. I feel like maybe 7. No, 7 is 400 Blows.
Oh, okay.
It's Francois Truffaut teamed up and continued the life and story of Antoine Donnel, the kid character from 400 Blows.
Holy shit.
In a sequence of other films. And so we're going to sit down and watch those.
Nice.
But yeah, until then, tune in for that. But thank you for listening to By Brackage, and hope you enjoyed it. For this week's episode, I'm Chris.
And I'm Tom. See you next time.